from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big NSA spying revelations keep on coming. France and Mexico now livid over allegations of U.S. snooping on their citizens' communications. Even, it's reported, hacking into the Mexican president's personal email. The backlash is big and growing. One casualty may be America's role in regulating the internet. A statement out from the world's net governance groups points away from U.S. hegemony. What could that look like? This hour on Point, the future of net governance. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Can you blame other countries for having raised hackles at America's internet role after the NSA revelations? Could we see a freer internet or a nationalized free-for-all leading to crackdown? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With Edward Snowden's revelations and all we've learned about NSA, many countries very unhappy lately about how the United States has used its sort of central role in the internet. Here, just last month at the UN General Assembly was the Brazilian president, Dilma Rousseff. Word has come out, of course, that the NSA spied on her, her private correspondence, her internet history, emails, her aides. Here she was before the United Nations, speaking through an interpreter.
What we have before us, Mr. President, is a serious case of violation of human rights and civil liberties. A case of invasion and capture of confidential secret information pertaining to business activities. And above all, a case of disrespect to national sovereignty, the national sovereignty of my country.
Does she want the United States at the heart of internet oversight? No, she does not. Others as well, and they're pushing on it now. Like never before, that kind of atmosphere just expands. This morning, French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius, interpreted here by the BBC, told journalists he had summoned the U.S. Ambassador Charles Rivkin to discuss allegations of large-scale spying on French citizens by the NSA.
J'ai convoqué immédiatement l'ambassadeur des États-Unis.
In view of the information in Le Monde, I've immediately summoned the United States ambassador, and he'll be received this morning at the Quai d'Orsay. We'd already been alerted in June, and we reacted strongly, but obviously it must go further. Such practices between partners that undermine privacy are totally unacceptable.
In Montevideo, Uruguay, just weeks ago, a meeting of big internet oversight organizations coming out with a statement that may be a signpost of where we're headed here. Signatories expressing, quote, strong concern over the undermining of the trust and confidence of internet users globally due to recent revelations of pervasive monitoring and surveillance. They didn't name it, but everyone understands they're talking about the NSA and that statement from ICANN and others in Uruguay. Later in this hour, we will be joined by the president and CEO of ICANN, one of the top organizations responsible for regulation and coordination of the internet. There's a big meeting going on in Bali right now where this is very high on the agenda. Fadi Shahadeh will be with us from there. But first, Milton Mueller joins us from Washington, professor at the Syracuse University School of Information Studies, author of Networks and States, the Global Politics of Internet Governance, and Ruling the Root, Internet Governance and the Taming of Cyberspace. Milton Mueller, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Happy to be here.
Also with us from Washington is Sasha Meinrath, Vice President of the New America Foundation public policy think tank there, Director of the Open Technology Institute. Time magazine pegged him as one of the top 40 most influential minds in tech this year. He's watching all this. Sasha Meinrath, welcome to you as well.
Pleasure to be here, Tom.
Milton, what's going on? I mean, I think it might be good to start with the United States' role, what it has been in the internet, how central it has been in oversight.
Sure. So the United States basically created ICANN, and of course it created the internet's naming and numbering system and the internet protocols. And when the National Science Foundation was helping to build this network as an education and research network, it started contracting with people to administer these basic functions.
You've got ICANN, the Internet Corporation, for assigned names and numbers. They assign domain names and top-level domains, .com, .org, all that. Big influence.
Well, I mean, you call them a regulator of the internet, but in fact, they're just regulating a domain name system. And the domain name system is important, but it isn't the internet. A lot of what happens on the internet happens between internet service providers. And a lot of the regulatory framework was actually set by the liberalization of telecommunications and information services in the 80s and 90s. But the U.S. definitely led both processes. The U.S. was the pusher, globally pushing for liberalization of information services around the world, for trade liberalization of information, and it created the ICANN regime. And it supervises and controls ICANN through a contract that's issued by the U.S. Department of Commerce. And that is what is being attacked now by these internet groups, including ICANN. Many of us, including myself, have been saying that the U.S. should continue the privatization of ICANN and should get out of this special role. It's always been a provocation for governments. It has been since basically 2003, when they had the World Summit on the Information Society, and governments complained about it then, and they wanted ICANN to be taken over by the ITU. And then it was an issue again last year in the World Conference on International Telecommunications. The fundamental debate here is about the role of sovereignty versus the role of transnationalism and globalism. And the NSA, you know, in many ways, the NSA revelations are completely unrelated to ICANN. For example, you know, the NSA wasn't able to do what it did because the U.S. controls ICANN. The NSA was able to do what it does because of the centrality of the U.S. in the global infrastructure and because of its advanced techniques for breaking into things and because of its incredible resources, the unbelievable amounts of money we spend on it to do things. And that's the whole world of national security and the military, which is, in fact, distinct and hopefully will continue to be distinct from the civil governance of the Internet.
We've got some big ironies here. I mean, the U.S., Sasha, as you point out, has been kind of a champion of openness and freedom, maybe even moving toward the transnationalism, globalism of the Internet. And yet the NSA's, whether they're directly empowered by its position or not, the NSA's, the revelations of its very large internet spying, among other kinds, has put what you call the U.S. role as chief internet steward, America's de facto control over the global internet, quoting you here, at risk. What's at stake in that, Sasha?
So as Milton points out, a lot of these reputational troubles have been brewing for quite a long time. And what the NSA is perceived to be is just another continuation that demonstrates to the rest of the globe that the United States has not been an ethical internet steward, in essence that it has taken advantage of its centrality in ways that we wouldn't want other countries to do, right? So if we think about a civil society being one that is everyone's equal under the law and there is a rule of law, then the standard that we should be thinking about is what happens when other countries harmonize their laws with ours, i.e., what happens when the Chinas of the world or the Irans of the world say, look, we're gonna monitor all of you guys, and we're going to have a secret court, and it's going to make the check and balance happen, and don't worry because we've got this one person that we'll put into the secret court that's going to stand up for civil rights and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That is, we would adopt current U.S. policy.
Absolutely. What do we do when everyone else harmonizes on our policy? Do we want an internet where everyone is always spying on each other and that's normative and acceptable international behavior?
Sasha, what's the gap between American rhetoric over the years on the internet and what we have now seen in the behavior of the NSA? What's the gap there?
Well, let me be clear. Many countries are spying online. This is not a singular thing to the United States.
Yep.
The U.S. is obviously probably orders of magnitude larger in its surveillance regime. But we made decisions over the years to forego certain immediate wins, right? We decided we would not militarize outer space. We decided that we would forego chemical and biological weaponry. We did these decisions because we realized that the trajectory that put us on was incredibly dangerous. And likewise, we need to look at cyberspace as a commons that if we abuse, we create a kind of resource that is far less beneficial to civil society than it otherwise could be. And so the U.S., in essence, has a responsibility not just to forego this kind of surveillance, but also to stand up and be a champion for openness, for transparency, for rule of law, for the kinds of stewardship that we want to see in the world.
But have we now blown that? Isn't that the question on the table? People look at the NSA, whether it's directly related or not, and say, are you kidding me? You're going to be the champion of all these great values? What a joke.
Tom, I'd have to say that we have blown it. And the fact of the matter is, we do have these ideals of freedom, and they do need to be spread globally. But when it comes down to national security and the military, the United States is a government. It's a government like any other government. The Chinese have a military. They spy. They break into things. They would conduct cyber operations and warfare against somebody if they thought it was necessary. The same for France. The same for Germany.
Yeah, but Sasha points out, we've exercised restraint before in the militarization of space, in chemical and biological weapons, and yet here the NSA seems to have come in just massively, Milton.
We tend to exercise restraint when it's in our interest to exercise restraint, when it's in our interest as a state. And that's the key thing. We have to decide what's in our interest now to promote freedom of the Internet.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the world pushing back on America's historically large influence over the Internet. After all the revelations of NSA spying, the U.S. may be getting fired from its role as Internet top dog. Although already in August, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, concerned about how the world would take on board the revelations from Edward Snowden and more about NSA activity. Here he is, August 9th.
To others around the world, I want to make clear, once again, that America is not interested in spying on ordinary people. Our intelligence is focused above all on finding the information that's necessary to protect our people and, in many cases, protect our allies. It's true, we have significant capabilities. What's also true is we show a restraint that many governments around the world don't even think to do.
Maybe so, but the capacity is so great that it doesn't look like restraint to many right now. Sasha Meinrath is with us, director of the Open Technology Institute out of Washington. Milton Mueller from the Syracuse University School of Information Studies. And right now, I want to go to Bali, Indonesia, where there's a very large meeting going on of those who are at the heart of all this Internet oversight globally, the organizations that have the biggest roles in that meeting right now. And among them, ICANN, perhaps most prominent, the Internet Corporation for Sign, Names, and Numbers. Fadi Shahadi is president and CEO. He joins us now from Bali. Fadi Shahadi, thank you very much for being with us. Is this issue high on the agenda in Bali right now, looking at the American role?
Hi, Tom. Indeed, it is. It is the subject of a lot of interest by governments that have different interests, but also by civil society, by businesses, all of us here gathered in Bali to try and understand the world post these revelations.
Now, you've been talking with heads of state in Brazil and elsewhere who are very concerned about the American role. Those who are unhappy with its centrality, what would they like to see? There must be more than one view on that, but what are the voices calling for?
To be frank, when you have conversations one-on-one with leaders, the rhetoric goes down and the focus is, how do we keep the Internet stable, secure, reliable, and open, in fact? To my surprise, there is a very clear understanding that an open Internet is good for everyone, that a free Internet is good for everyone. I think there is, though, an interest to figure out how can we all have an equal footing. And by all, I mean not just all governments, but also all stakeholders in the management of this great resource. And that's a difficult question to answer, because for the last 15 years, many stakeholders came together to advance the Internet and its governance. But the U.S., by history, had a unique role in that activity. But I think we're at the point, and we have been calling for this for many years, this is nothing new, where setting an equal footing for everyone has become a priority.
Is the American role, I don't know what word to use, vulnerable to that demotion? Or is it fixed by contract with you and ICANN, Fadi? Is it invulnerable?
I think the current role the United States has with ICANN was always envisaged to change. The timing of that was the question, not if, it was just when. And I think now it is clear that we need to talk about changing that role and evolving it to become a more global role where all stakeholders, not just governments, all stakeholders have an equal footing in the governance of the Internet. So the timing has been put into clear focus right now. That is what's happening.
Is Washington open to relinquishing its historical role, or is it resisting?
Washington wants to make sure the Internet remains open, available for all people, all users around the world in a open and free way, and want to make sure that none of the evolutionary ideas that anyone has, frankly, take away from the security, stability, and the reliability of this Internet. Therefore, I think Washington will consider, at the right time, in the right framework, an evolution of this role in a frankly calm and wise way. And by the way, the thing, Tom, that frankly continues to amaze me in a good way is the number of governments and stakeholders I talk to who actually are not, despite their calls over years for Washington to give an equal role to everyone, they're not rushing to do this in any way that would jeopardize, again, the core value and the core availability in a stable way of the Internet. Everyone is cautious.
Do you think, Fadi Shahadeh, that the United States has now forfeited its claim on special influence on the Internet by its now revealed NSA spying activity? Do you think that?
I believe that all governments who use a resource that is so vital and so critical to our lives now and our economies, any government or any power that misuses these resources or uses them for certain activities that interfere with basic rights that people have around the world, frankly, puncture the public trust in the Internet. And I think that the U.S., activities which have revealed a certain interest are just what has been revealed, but there are many, many other activities that have not been revealed. I think what...
Do you mean American or otherwise?
Otherwise, yeah. Mm-hmm. Other countries, other governments engage in the same or similar activities. Maybe we can argue about the scale, but it's a question really of a certain approach to this incredibly important resource. And I think the puncturing of that public trust is what's moving many people here in Bali, who are gathered nearly 2,000 people from around the globe, to think about how we cooperate in the management of the Internet. It's moving a lot of people to think, okay, how do we create checks and balances so that we can safeguard the public trust in the Internet? We should, and this morning in my opening speech, I did call on everyone to act as an equal steward in restoring this public trust. The Internet is too valuable for us to lose that public trust, which I think has been the engine of incredible things that I'm sure you and your listeners know, whether it's the creativity enabled by the Internet, the human development, the free expression, the unity that it has brought to communities around the world, and frankly, I'd even argue the peace that the Internet has brought, because the Internet brings us together across borders and across cultures.
Fadi Shahadi, we know it's very late there in Bali, where you've got the Internet Governance Forum going on, president and CEO of ICANN, the big kind of central organization and all that. It's very generous of you to have spent a few minutes so late at night with us, but we're grateful for it. Thank you very much, and good luck there in Bali.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much.
Fadi Shahadi, thank you very much for joining us. Sasha Meinrath, interpret what we just heard there, if you would.
Well, as I'd mentioned, we're really dealing with a crisis of faith that the U.S. is acting in the best interests of netizens around the globe. So whereas the, you know, President Obama says we're using restraint, I think it's clear when the NSA is actively hacking encryption and making us less secure, that is not adequate restraint. When we're collecting 70 million phone calls from Frenchmen in a single month, we're criminalizing, in essence, an entire country. That's not adequate restraint. You know, when we're collecting the address books and call information of millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of Americans, an order, by the way, that was just renewed on Friday, that is not adequate restraint. And as Fadi mentions, this internet, this global resource, works best when there's a modicum of trust amongst the participants in this heterogeneity of networks. And when the U.S. engages in actions that undermine that fundamental trust, the internet, this network of networks, cannot operate as effectively, efficiently, and safely as it once could.
When the ICANN CEO says he wants to promote nations and non-governmental actors acting as equal stewards, what does that suggest, Sasha? And how much of a change for the United States' role does that imply?
Well, the internet has been built from the ground up to be a network of networks. This isn't a singular network, but rather a huge amalgam of interconnected systems. And in some ways, what I'm interpreting Fadi would be to say, he's saying that, look, this has always been this heterogeneity of networks, and we have a responsibility to maintain this heterogeneity, to decentralize a lot of the mechanisms by which the internet works.
But it hasn't had equal stewardship, even though it's been many networks. The United States has been, as you describe it, the chief internet steward with de facto control, your words.
That's right. And the reality is, to get Winstonian for just a moment, you know, this is the worst possible system, except for all the others.
You mean the American centrality or something else?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so what we're looking at now is, how do we formulate what's next? You know, it is absolutely the case that the internet governance mechanisms have continually evolved. And we're in the midst of that history. So what I see is the NSA revelations to be perhaps a catalyst for looking at, okay, what is next? What better fits the needs of participants in the internet? What better way to have a more participatory, more democratic structure for the internet, without going down these cul-de-sacs of, you know, lowest common denominator human rights kind of mentality that some countries might want online.
Which would be easy to arrive at. After all, I mean, China, just in the last month, 6 weeks, talking about their purification of the online environment and jailing people for rumoring, for spreading rumors, I mean, which can be anything on the internet. We're looking at the world pushing back on America's historically large influence over the internet after the revelations of NSA spying. Milton Mueller, what do you see coming here? If the fall of American influence, if that's what we're talking about here, means the rise of, well, I mean, you name it, a Brazilian or French or Chinese influence on the internet, is that what it means? And what does that portend?
Well, I hope it doesn't mean that, because what I think we need to do, again, is to detach the governance of the internet from national powers, military powers, the world of nation states, and make it a self-governing realm, more located in civil society and business. And if we have this free and open internet that is transnationally governed, I think American companies and American services will do fine. What's discredited them now is their connection to the U.S. government and the way it spies on people.
But the vacuum created by that discrediting, I don't know if it's being filled by civil society. It's nation states that are speaking up. I mean, the Brazilian president right there at the podium in the UN General Assembly going after President Obama directly.
It's true, but Fadi said two things. One of them to me very encouraging, the other a little bit dangerous. So he said that when you talk to these nation states privately, these leaders, they all recognize that that they want a free and open internet, that there's massive social, economic, and political benefits of having this. And I think there would be a worldwide consensus for some kind of liberal free flow of information.
I'm very skeptical about what you just said, just to note that. Do you think China really wants what you just described?
Well, that's my second point, which is when he talks about everybody being an equal stakeholder, I think that that's kind of misframing what we need to do next. It's not a question of making everybody an equal stakeholder so much as it is as institutionalizing the freedom and decentralization of power that we've had. For example, suppose that the oversight of ICANN, do you want to make it suddenly multilateral? Do you want China and Russia and all of the Middle Eastern authoritarian states all in there with
like
an equal vote?
Like a security council, yeah.
Exactly. Even worse than a security
like a
council,
mm-hmm.
a general assembly.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want that overseeing the basic decisions of ICANN on a day-to-day basis? Of course we don't. That would be a disaster. We want to get that whole high-level political cruft out of basic internet governance decisions and allow it to be this, you know, decentralized network of networks where people act on the basis of cooperation.
But it just seems tragic what the U.S. may be forfeiting here on the basis, on the back of this NSA revelations.
No, but I think we're not forfeiting anything, really. We're actually we're trying to be true to our original vision, which was that the internet would be free and independent of domination by states. And we held on to that power a little too long, and we abused it a little bit. But what we're really capable of doing now, it could go either direction. It could empower other nation states and fragment the internet. But it could also push us towards innovative new forms of governance, which are, achieving these goals of maintaining the free and open internet.
I understand the impulse. Many would like it. Sasha, I don't know if the United States is going to be able to present itself and even its values in such a benign manner now.
Well, it's certainly the case that the U.S. has to make a major pivot. It has to get out ahead of these issues, right? So I view this as, you know, this is the purview of real statesmanship. And the U.S. has a responsibility. If it wants to be taken seriously in this space, if it doesn't want things to get far worse, to reaffirm its commitment. And I think you do that by disassembling a lot of the surveillance that's happening, of reinstituting balance between civil rights and rule of law and necessary surveillance. I think we need to recommit to things like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and Article 19, that everyone has the right to freely communicate, to impart and receive information through any media, regardless of frontiers. This is a critical element.
I mean, it sounds great, but right there, doesn't our internet community of idealists and our own ideals run into our own national security apparatus with all its own power?
Sure it does. It can contradicts it, but this is our chance to overcome that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the world pushing back on America's historically large influence over the internet after all the revelations of NSA spying. The U.S. may be more or less getting fired from its role as internet top dog. Milton Mueller is with us, professor at the Syracuse University School of Information Studies, author of Networks and States and Ruling the Root. Sasha Meinrath is with us. He's VP at the New American Foundation and director of the Open Technology Institute. Milton, Sasha, lots of callers here in New Orleans. Marshall is calling. Hi, Marshall. Thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to contribute to the conversation. My concern was, you know, in a lot of my travels, you know, everybody's always asking, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Cause, I mean, they're not getting American national news every day like we do. So they hear on the bullhorn, oh, well, you know, Snowden, you know, revealed all this for the government. And, you know, it's a big concern of mine that other nations will get the wrong impression of everyday citizens like me as supporting things like this. And, you know, a big deal for me is, you know, how could that affect our economy? Because you have developing nations implementing internet services, you know, with companies like Google building their international empire and, you know, expanding. but they might be reluctant to implement, American services with a fear that we could be spying on them. I mean, it's kind of scary to think about making the internet more public too, because I know our prosecutorial system utilizes the internet so much to be effective and efficient and save money. And so a lot of these concerns kind of come into my head when I think about our problems globally and domestically.
Yeah, you and many others, Marshall, I appreciate your call from New Orleans. Sasha, this global public opinion issue surely comes into play one way or the other here. I mean, if the U.S. is exposed as not living up to its values on this global network, one assumes that will have consequences.
Absolutely. And we're already beginning to see them. I mean, I've been in the meetings in the White House and other places where industry is quite scared about the impact that this will have on their bottom line, that this could detrimentally impact, to the tune of tens of billions of dollars over the next few years, American industry, because people view these services as less safe or unsafe. And this is why a lot of these major companies are looking to be more transparent about what they're actually doing, because they're trying to get out ahead of the reputational crisis that they're facing. But thus far, at least, the U.S. has not done the kind of meaningful actions necessary to restore that trust. And I feel like, as someone that travels quite a lot internationally, I'm experiencing the same thing that Marshall is, which is that this absolutely is a major issue for a large and growing percentage of the global populace. And until we address that reputational crisis, we're going to keep having this snowballing impacts that detrimentally impact Americans.
I mean, it's such an irony, after the values that we have in no small part upheld, to have them undercut this way when you've got other great powers who are openly disdainful of those values. Josh in Cleveland, Ohio. Josh, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to comment on a point you were making earlier comparing the internet and the NSA to the militarization of space. And I'm not sure that that's quite a fair comparison, because although the NSA thing has been in the news quite a bit, it's been established pretty well that countries like Russia and China have been using the internet for military, for government purposes.
Sure, we've talked a lot about it, yeah.
Yeah, so when the U.S. was pretty much the sole power in space or the dominant power, they had a lot more chance to influence that. And here, despite all the news coverage that the Snowden bit is getting, I think that we're not really that much further ahead or doing it more than other countries are doing.
Well, let's look at potential impacts. Milton Mueller, we took On Point to Shanghai before the Beijing Olympics. And I remember very clearly a very high-placed industry and Communist Party official there saying that, down the road, China will control the global internet because it will have the most — control may be too strong a word — but have primary influence because it will have the most users. We may be at or near that point already. In real impact terms, how much does it matter what these organizations in Bali decide? How much actual hands-on power might the United States surrender, or China or others gain, depending on the sort of bureaucratic structure of internet influence and on governance?
Those are excellent questions, Tom. First, China indeed probably already does have more internet users than the United States. And that's going to be true of multiple countries that have populations larger than us. Certainly it will happen in India eventually. This is why, again, I don't think this idea that the U.S. can maintain its past role could ever be a viable one. However, the idea that China is going to control the internet because it is big is not going to happen, I don't think. And China pays a huge sacrifice for its repressive attitude towards the internet. Their service providers are stunted. Their users are stunted in terms of what they can do. And they are starting to get some globally competitive firms, but really a Chinese Google, for example, is not really that competitive in a free and open environment.
But if the United States loses standing here in at least rhetorically championing certain values, and China gains just sheer weight of users, is it not possible that the whole global enterprise of the Internet begins to tilt toward a Chinese view of it, whether it's given formal power or not in that situation, Milton?
No, I think that whatever the weight of China in terms of sheer numbers, that their model of Internet governance has not been popular. It has not been exported. It has not been picked up. You know, some people were talking about a Cold War on the Internet, you know, back at the time of the revelations of the Chinese espionage in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I pointed out that, you know, there's no bipolarity here. There's not like a Chinese supporting Communist Party in 75 countries around the world really agitating for the Chinese view. It's really fairly isolated diplomatically. And they are, you know, desperately hanging on to power by engaging in these repressive tactics. I'm pretty optimistic about the ultimate victory of liberty versus repression over the long term.
Sasha Meinrath, we heard Fadi Shahadi, the head of ICANN there in Bali, saying they're looking for this to float to something more free of nation states. That's part of what he seemed to be suggesting. I imagine with the values that would go back to the original free and open internet ideal, but nations have influence. Does a diminution of U.S. standing mean necessarily a diminution of those free and open ideals for the web?
Well, I think what this means is that people will develop services and applications to re-secure their communications. I fear we're going to end up in kind of a data obfuscation, a data hiding arms race that we cannot win. In essence, that people will start encrypting everything end-to-end. People will start utilizing services and applications that anonymize and
to defend themselves from the NSA, but also everything else, like everyone hiding from everyone.
Exactly. And so what you end up with is a series of interconnected individuals that are working, spending lots of time and energy and money to secure their communications, which of course all comes at the expense of other productive things that they could be doing with that time and energy and money. I do believe, though, that we are also in danger not of a Chinese internet, but rather of a more fractured internet. That you have a halal net in Iran, you have the Chinese firewall, you've got the U.S. surveillance state, you've got all of these different systems whereby the legal mandates for surveillance or opening up your communication differ depending on where you go. That would, again, dramatically increase the costs, the transaction costs of communicating. And that is a net negative for society as a whole.
Is that an opportunity cost of the NSA reputational crisis that you're talking about as well? Does it encourage that fracturing?
Absolutely. I mean, what we're seeing internationally, the discussions that are happening around the globe, that are happening in Bali right now, that are happening at the UN, are all indicators of these stresses and strains that we are now, in essence, catalyzing. So I view the NSA revelations as a mechanism by which, you know, a crisis by which we can decide, what does this future trajectory look like? There's a positive realm in which we evolve the structures for internet governance and we recommit to openness and freedom of expression and right of assembly and right of anonymity and privacy. And then there's this dystopian trajectory where we continue to surveil more and more and more, and everyone has to spend more and more time and energy and expertise figuring out how to circumvent surveillance.
We'd like to think the U.S. Role in that, finger on the scale, would be in a fully positive direction, but this NSA situation has made that very complicated right now. Phil in Medford, Massachusetts. Phil, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So I've been doing web security now for 20 years and standards, and one of the effects of the NSA revelations is that now I have to go back over those 20 years and ask which of the bad decisions we made security-wise might have been influenced by an NSA mole trying to make the specification less secure or more biased towards American interests.
Are you entirely serious about that, Phil? It sounds kind of like a, you know, potboiler novel idea, but you mean it?
Oh, of course. I mean, like, I do security, I do cryptography. Of course I'm watched. I mean, they'd be stupid not to. So the standards decision that I think has the most issue is the design of the DNSSEC route.
Please put that in layman terms for us,
so
if you could.
So the DNS at the moment, the domain name system at the moment is insecure. So there's no cryptographic security built in. When you go to Amazon.com, if you go to a bad DNS router, it could send you anywhere. And there's a bunch of ad hoc security that keeps the internet roughly secure. Mm-hmm. So there's been a long-standing attempt to introduce cryptographic security into the system so that you could be certain that you're going to Amazon.com or Google.com.
That would be nice as I punch in my Visa number or whatever.
Well, yes, but the thing is that the control of the route is vested in one party at the moment, which is ICANN.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that if you have somebody in Congress decide, okay, we're going to force ICANN to drop Cuba or Palestine out of the route.
Mm-hmm.
If that happened today, well, the route would simply fracture. ICANN wouldn't be in charge of anything within 3 months. The whole of ICANN would simply collapse. And so there'd be no point in making that attack. If, on the other hand, everything is chaining up to this DNSSEC route and the public key that corresponds to the ICANN key is embedded in things like your mobile phone, your Wi-Fi router at home, you know, billions of devices, you know, because there's a billion devices produced every year that have internet enabled. So if you had to change all those billion devices, well, it would make it impossible to use them.
Phil, you know this stuff inside out. Tie this back to the situation of resistance now to American centrality and oversight. Does it relate to that? Is it?
Oh, it's one of the touchstones that is the. I mean, this is the reason why the Russian Secret Service has been off to talk to ICANN and tell them just how worried they are about it. The Palestinian Prime Minister has been over to talk to ICANN and say that they're worried about it. You see, the thing is that for all they're talking about becoming less dependent upon the U.S., ICANN is a California company. You know, they're incorporated in California.
So?
Which means that if the Congress tells them to drop Palestine or Cuba out of the route, then they're going to do that or go to jail.
So are you in favor of a less central role for the U.S. as a web cryptographer, Phil, or not?
Well, I think this should be a... People should be less keen on having a central role, because if you concentrate power in one place, you know, it becomes like the Lord of the Rings. You know, the One Ring was evil because it concentrated power in that one place. What we need to do is to stop concentrating power in one place and then having fights over who has that power, and instead devolve the power down peer-to-peer within the internet community, so there isn't one place that you can attack and win everything.
Apart from nation-states, you mean. Do you think that will happen? Will nation-states surrender that authority? That's not their natural bent.
I think that they will come to an agreement where, you know, Russia and China and the U.S. will all come to the agreement that what they want is to control everything. What they will settle for is to stop all the other parties from controlling.
Phil, I'm so glad you called. Our time is short, but you're terrific. Call again, Milton Mueller. I mean, here's our listener. Bobby says perhaps the internet should be sovereign from any state. In a sense, that's what Phil's describing there. Is that possible, that it float up and away and live in its own, you know, peer-to-peer wonderland?
That's an idea I've been exploring here in Washington. I call it internet nationalism. If you're going to, or internet sovereignty, it was an idea that was articulated in a visionary form by John Perry Barlow back in 1996, and people have been ridiculing him ever since. But in fact, there is a great deal of autonomy, and in some respects, the only solution to some of these problems is quite literally to denationalize them and get them out of the purview of nation states. Let me go back to this example of the DNSSEC route. If you look at how the cryptographic key signing ceremony was designed, it was designed in a way that gave the U.S. Department of Commerce ultimate control over how that route is signed. And the gentleman is right. We at the Internet Governance Project, we've been talking about this for some time, how that centralizes power or potentially centralizes power. Now, the bad news here is that we're in the process of creating another standard called RPKI, which does the same thing for routing, for internet service providers. So we could be creating an even more centralized and brittle structure that would create enormous governance problems.
Sasha, we just have 20 seconds here. How will we know if this reputational crisis with NSA and the rest points us in a better direction or a worse direction? When will we know?
Yeah, the NSA revelations are a Sputnik moment for cyberspace. And the question really is, do we get out ahead of that as a nation, reaffirming basic fundamental human rights? Or do we continue this status quo of active surveillance of a global populace? And that's how we will know.
Watch this space. Sasha Meinrath, Milton Mueller, Farah Shahadeh from ICANN earlier in our conversation. Thanks to all listeners. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.